This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Fasten your seatbelts. We're digging into the volatility that's gripping global markets. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Heightened geopolitical tensions and worries over higher U.S. interest rates plunged American stock benchmarks deep into negative territory to start the week. But Wall Street's major averages did manage to stage a comeback yesterday. The broad S&P 500 index closed up almost 0.3%, while the tech-heavy NASDAQ gained 0.6%. That end-of-session rally has given a boost to European markets today. Benchmarks this side of the world are up in the 1 to 1.4% range. But worries over higher corporate borrowing costs, which come with higher interest rates, are continuing to weigh on sentiment in Asia. Stock markets there ended down more than 1.5% today, and U.S. futures are also lower. Feeling a bit whipsawed? Well, we called on Michael Hewson, chief market analyst at CMC Markets here in London, to try to make sense of what's happening.
There's an awful lot of uncertainty and speculation about how many times the Federal Reserve is likely to raise rates this year. And initial expectations were for them to raise rates three times. Obviously, inflation's expectations have moved up. And by and large, European markets haven't really been affected by that, despite concerns about Russian mobilizations of troops on the UK-Ukraine border. All that changed on Friday, and the drumbeat of conflict in Ukraine got an awful lot louder. And that caused US investors to take much more notice of what was going on over here in Europe. And you saw the reaction to that yesterday. European markets sold off, US markets sold off, and ultimately US investors are struggling to make sense of what to take notice of. You've got these two cross currents basically driving the markets.
Well, as Michael Hewson suggested there, those twin momentum drivers look to be sticking around just a little bit longer. The Federal Reserve's two-day meeting kicks off today with a decision on interest rates tomorrow. And geopolitical tensions are continuing over here in Europe today. That's pushing global oil prices up in the 1% range. The Kremlin said this morning it's greatly concerned by Washington's decision to put 8,500 troops on heightened alert because of worries over a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine. That's something Russia denies. Attention this side of the world has been acutely focused on how potential economic sanctions on Russia could affect Europe's supply of oil and natural gas. Nathan Piper, head of oil and gas research at Investec, explains how reliant the continent is on Russian supply.
The UK and Europe is deficient oil and gas. So we import oil and gas from various sources around the world. And in particular, Russia has a big role to play, providing around about 30% of EU's gas demand. It's a big problem. And before the Russia-Ukraine dispute really hit the headlines, gas prices were already at unprecedented levels. And that's a combination of low gas in storage. And yes, we are going through an energy transition, but that transition is going to take decades or multiple decades. And the issue in the short term is as Europe turns off coal-fired power stations and Germany in particular turns off nuclear-fired power, the only way to back up intermittent wind and other renewable sources is gas. So you can get gas via pipeline, like we do from Russia, or you can get gas via LNG, via boat, liquefied natural gas. And the price for liquefied natural gas, the one that can be sent anywhere in the world, reached peaks through the course of November and December, never been seen before. And it's these high gas prices that are underlining the structural challenge around the energy transition.
And this isn't necessarily because supplies were short. This is where geopolitics comes into play, right?
Well, geopolitics has certainly come into play more recently, but fundamentally, because of the energy transition really focusing on supply, so trying to reduce the supply of fossil fuels, but doing nothing about demand, the result is higher prices.
So what's the solution to this problem then?
Well, the solution is, you know, obviously if we could cut demand, that's one thing. But I think the ongoing investment in LNG will help at the margin. But I think some sort of diplomatic solution to the Ukraine-Russia issue and the conclusion of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline should help normalize some of the gas flows into Europe.
Nathan Piper from Investec, thanks for breaking this down for us.
My pleasure.
To Australia now, where a long-running controversy over a flag's copyright has been settled. The BBC's Phil Mercer has that story from Sydney.
It is an extraordinary story that the Aboriginal flag that was designated an official Australian national flag back in 1995 was still in private hands. It was created by an artist called Harold Thomas, and he had sole copyright that allowed him to grant exclusive licenses to third parties. 4 years ago, he gave the rights to the Aboriginal flag to a non-Indigenous clothing business. It had exclusive rights to print it and use it. And that non-Indigenous firm did issue infringement notices to smaller Indigenous organisations and big sporting bodies because it claimed that they were breaching the copyright. So for the last 2 or 3 years, the government has been negotiating with Harold Thomas, the man who created the flag back in the early 1970s. And finally, the government now has copyright of the emblem and it can be freely used by everyone in this country.
How big of an issue has it been? Because you referenced there have been some legal battles over this.
This flag has had immense cultural, political and financial importance. It is a rectangular flag. The top half is black. The bottom half is red. Right in the middle, there's a bold, bright yellow disc signifying the sun. And this flag represents the Aboriginal people and their connection to the land. So Indigenous campaigners believe that the flag has essentially been held hostage by corporate Australia. But the Australian government has spent about $14 million to buy the copyright. So for the first time ever, the Aboriginal flag belongs to all Australians.
The BBC's Phil Mercer for us in Sydney. Thanks for breaking this down for us.
Thanks, Victoria.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.